Next speaker is Rick Tuttle.
Thank you. I'm Rick Tuttle, and I was, until a moment or two ago, going to tell an anecdote about the Chatham County Jail in Savannah, Georgia. But I think I'll begin with some comments about Wazir Peacock and Fannie Lou Hamer, and a role I played essentially as the lieutenant to Wazir Peacock, the giant of I think everyone here in Bay Area, friends of SNCC, knows a giant of the civil rights movement in Mississippi. And what made me think of it is I was just reminded the vocal we just heard was Mrs. Hamer's voice in one of her songs. And her name has come up. Mike Miller had mentioned her name a few minutes ago and others, so it's appropriate to begin there. To frame this for some of the younger people, my summer of 1963 was spent in Mississippi and in Georgia working with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, as you've heard called. And I was motivated by an article which appeared in, I believe it was Collier's Magazine, by a man named John Poppy, who wrote about voter registration in Mississippi that highlighted the work of Sam Block, may he rest in peace, and also Charles McLaurin, who were registering voters in the Delta, and Willie Peacock was also mentioned. Then Birmingham happened with the big demonstrations, the fire hoses. Everyone in the school has seen pictures of those. And I said unto myself, if I'm ever going to become involved, I had missed the Freedom Rides, literally the rides in 1961 had pulled out before my friends and I were able to be part of the East Coast Freedom Rides. I'm at the time at UCLA and beginning graduate school, and through a series of circumstances, Steve McNichols, who cannot be with us here today, was a Freedom Rider in 1961, coupled me up with Sam Block and Charles McLaurin, who happened to be in town. They'd been visiting the Bay Area, friends of SNCC. Then they'd come down, raise some funds, had a car, and we drove into 708 Avenue N in Greenwood, Mississippi, where I met Willie Peacock. Bob Moses was out of town at the time. I bunked in a Freedom House with Lawrence Guillot, whose name was mentioned earlier today. We literally slept in the same bed. We were bunked in, tucked in. That morning he got up and had gotten word that Mrs. Hamer and five young ladies, including one of whom, June Johnson, passed a couple of years ago, and Al Ponder and two others, had been at a Freedom School visit over in eastern Georgia in the Sea Islands and had been arrested in Winona, Mississippi, which is about 45 minutes east of Greenwood, and were in custody, and bad things were happening. Lawrence Guillot went over to bring the bail money. He was either in charge of the office or one of the people in charge of the office. But in any event, he mentioned to me as he went out the door, this is before a cup of coffee, he mentioned to me, he just went right out to do it, I have to go bail them out. They took him in front of the Baptist church in Winona an hour or so later. It was a Sunday. And they brutally beat him with a baseball bat. And they pounded him in the head. His head, by all reports, was swelled up this big. There was no local remedy. This is 1963. Remember, no one was sure who was going to win this struggle for civil rights. But what we did know, in much of the South, and certainly in Mississippi, is the FBI had folded its arms, stepped back. In fact, the local FBI fellow was running for the state legislature in a lily white primary in Mississippi. He was running. And then the sheriff, the police, and so on were either folding their arms or, in some cases, some of their individuals were complicit with us. What to do? And I basically did what Willie Peacock told me to do. And we had a lot of different tasks to perform. I forget if you call Carl. What we did have were two reporters we could count on. Carl Fleming is all we had, by the way. We had Carl Fleming over at Newsweek, Claude Sitton of the New York Times, and Julian Bond, if I believe Willie. I'm going to refer to you contemporarily as Willie Wazir. And then you had me call, Willie Peacock had me call Medgar Evers. There were a lot of things happening at once. We were moving fast. I reached Mr. Evers, who said to me, explained we were looking for bail money again, explained what had happened. He said to me, I remember his voice. It was calm. It was businesslike. Been there, been involved, going back years, Emmett Till. I knew who he was from the Emmett Till matter. I knew about him. So, and he said, well, I said, explain to Mr. Evers why I was calling. I was calling on Willie Peacock's behalf, calling from the COFO office, SNCC. It was part of the Council of Federated Organizations, which was a coalition of CORE, NAACP, SNCC. SNCC did most of the staffing, much of the work, but not all of it. Others were involved. And he said, I will call you back. I have to go to a meeting. And I'll call you. And I have no reason to doubt that as he got out of his car and reached for his keys a little later that evening, I said, well, I have to call that fellow, meaning me, or someone, back up at the Civil Rights Office. And that's when Byron D. Lebeckwith shot him in the back and murdered him. Now what to do? All hell breaks loose in Jackson. Major demonstrations and so on and so forth were mounting. People were very, very upset, understandably. But meanwhile, Mr. Guyot, Mrs. Hamer, and the other young ladies were still in custody, and we didn't quite know where they were. We had some feel, but we were very worried because, as you heard from other stories, there was some danger they were being moved around, and everyone's responsible and no one's responsible, that sort of thing. And about that time, something else happened. University of Alabama is about the integrations. That whole choreography was taking place at one state to the east of us. So recognizing all that, in one of the more brilliant acts of engagement I've ever witnessed, Mr. Peacock, Willie Peacock, suggested that I call the governor, and that I call Governor Ross Barnett. And I said, of course, what probably anyone else would say, well, why me? I'm certainly willing to do it. He said, your voice can get through. I have a white voice. I called Governor Barnett. I explained exactly who I was, and I got through. One secretary and then another, and then got through to him. There have to be taps and tapes around here somewhere on this. And I did exactly, I didn't have a written script, but it might as well have been written. I mean, well, he basically told me what to say. Which I said, listen, we know you're busy in Jackson. And if we don't hear by sundown where they are, meaning Mr. Guyot, Mrs. Hamer, and the others, we will mount major demonstrations up here in the Delta, here in Greenwood. And we know you put in every resource you have, fish and game wardens, highway patrol, state police, police generally have mobilized because of the difficulties you're having in Jackson. He said, son, are you threatening me? I said, no, Governor. I am reporting to you what will happen. And about an hour and a half later, the phone rang from the highway patrol. Last time I knew, in a state government, the highway patrol does report to the governor. Highway patrol phoned and informed the office. I didn't take the call, so I assume Mr. Peacock took the call as to where they were, where we could get them. And then Andrew Young came over, Reverend Young came over, arrived and went and bailed them out. So part of what I have to, the reason I've never had reason to or to discuss or frankly have reminisced very much about this until, although there was an earlier setting this year, but this is the first opportunity I've had to tell this part of the story. And as Willie Peacock and I, as Wazir Peacock and I said years later to one another, as Wazir said to me, and I could not have put it better some years ago and a good many years from that. Remember the Mississippi of the time. The Mississippi of the time, what it was like, Emmett Till and so on and on and on. We kept them alive. What we did was to keep them alive. Because Mrs. Hamer was kept alive, a year later, she appeared at the Credentials Committee of the seating of the Mississippi delegation. For anyone here who lived through the period or will read about it, and I can strongly recommend it to the younger people here, to hear her encapsulate that what happened to the Democratic National Convention Credentials Committee with all the TV cameras on it, helped make vivid the Mississippi experience and the Southern experience of the civil rights. So it's a great privilege to be here today. The Chatham County jail story will wait to another time. It's been my privilege to be here today. I want to also congratulate. I'll miss someone, Bruce Hartford and Don Jelinek and Mike Miller and everyone else who put on this program. I appreciate the invitation. Mike, you're somewhere around here. I appreciate the invitation to come here today. I'm down in Los Angeles these days. For everyone here who's walked the walk, and it was a, to use a term that you hear occasionally, a great privilege to have walked with you along the way. Thank you.
Things that went on between me and Rick Tuttle while we were doing that. We actually didn't, there was a doctor who brought food to us while we were keeping them alive for about 3 or 4 days. And we designed questions. They finally let us talk to Miss Hamer and all of the, everybody's in the jail, and we designed questions whereby they only had to say yes or no. And with those yes and no questions, we found out everything.